being diagnosed with autism, 1 in 150. You know the odds of autism. Now learn the signs. No big smiles or other joyful expressions by 6 months. No back and forth sharing of sounds or facial expressions by 9 months. And no babbling by 12 months. To learn more of the signs, visit AutismSpeaks.org.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
And it's exactly 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall.
We'll be right back.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. I'm Emmanuel. This over here is Kyle.
Indeed, yes.
Oh, okay. So I thought I got it wrong.
No, you got it right. This is Kyle. I'm here joining you on a Tuesday evening, a overcast, cloudy.
No, you can say it. It's a rainy Tuesday evening now. And since you brought it up, yeah, that's one of my buttons.
So you're... Well, maybe I should explain to everyone.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have an approaching polar vortex. Yes, we're in the vortex now. And what that means is it's going to get real cold.
Yeah, real cold. Really, really cold. Just like
super,
it did last week.
Duper cold.
Really, really, really cold.
Crazy cold.
But guess what doesn't come with the cold?
No, I refuse. I won't
guess. Guess what doesn't come with
it? You can't make me.
This keeps happening. This is now the third time in a row where it's been super cold. Really, really cold. And no precipitation. And then, for a few minutes, gets warm and all of a sudden the heavens open up. What the hell's going on?
You know what that means in German? Nee, Schnee.
Yeah, I got you Nee, Schnee right here.
Or maybe that's Dutch.
Well, whatever it is, it's true. We're not getting any damn snow.
None.
And I'm just a little bit fed up with it.
Not
you know?
A flake.
I wait for winter for at least half the year, okay? Mm. And when it gets here, I expect some winter weather. Is that so much to ask? I don't think it is.
No, it isn't much to ask. In fact, it's to be expected. We expect it. We bought salt. We bought piles of salt. We bought piles of sand.
It's not about the salt, Kyle. It's not about what we bought. It's about what we want, what we anticipate.
I taped a shovel to the front of the smart car. I'm ready.
One of your better ideas, too.
I got
too.
Galoshes, and yeah, we got a bulldozer ready in the driveway.
Just, no, can you explain, is this solar vortex, whatever you're calling it, is that why this happens, where it gets really cold, and then it gets warm for a few minutes, and that's when it rains, and then it gets cold again, and nothing happens? That's what's going on? Is this some kind of natural thing, or is Trump somehow responsible for this?
I don't know which will make you feel better, but... it's that the extreme cold that you might imagine in the polar region kind of dips down in waves, and the warmer air in the south tries to push up, but even those places in the Midwest and in the southern regions, they get a taste of this. That's why you'd had some snowfall in places like Atlanta and
now
Georgia.
Explain that to me, okay? Because they're getting snow to the north of us. They're getting snow to the south of us. They're getting snow to the west of us. And probably in the Atlantic Ocean, they're getting snow to the east of us. Why aren't we getting any damn snow? I'm livid with rage here because, I expect January's almost over, all right? January's a good winter month, you know? And when January's gone, then we have February. That's the shortest month. So we have to cram a lot of snow in there. And March, the snow in March never lasts. So, you know, I just like variety. That's what I like. I like, you know, diverse weather. I like to suffer in the summer with heat and freeze in the winter with cold. And I'm getting the cold. I know that. But what good is cold if you can't slide on some ice or drive on snowy roads and get snowbound a little bit?
I said that this was not going to make you too happy.
No, I'm not too happy. That's definitely true.
I can hear it in your voice.
Can you see it in my face? You're looking away, and I don't think that's healthy. I think you should confront the horror.
It's making it difficult.
Dead on.
It's making it difficult to converse, I'll say that.
All right. Well, you know, Trump had something to say about this, by the way. Listen to this tweet today. It was actually last night. In the beautiful Midwest, wind chill temperatures are reaching minus 60 degrees, the coldest ever recorded. In coming days, expected to get even colder. People can't last outside, even for minutes. What the hell is going on with global warming? Please come back fast. We need you! Exclamation point. I did say global warning because that's what he said. He didn't say global warming. He said global warning. Whatever. But this buffoon thinks that because it's cold, that means there's no global warming. Or warning, whatever. But you know what? It doesn't really work that way. While the Midwest, and this is according to the Associated Press, I know, fake news, While the Midwest is in the grip of a chill that's likely to set records, Earth is still considerably warmer than it was 30 years ago, and especially 100 years ago. The lower 48 states make up only 1.6% of the globe. Did you know that? 1.6%. We feel like we're so important, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And five western states are warmer than normal. The Earth as a whole, and it is global warming, not U.S. warming, on Tuesday is 0.54 degrees, that's Fahrenheit, 0.3 degrees Celsius, warmer than the 1979 to 2000 average, and 1.6 degrees warmer than it was on average about 100 years ago. That's according to data from the University of Maine's Climate Reanalyzer and NASA. Yeah, fake science, I know, but it's true.
Yeah, and recall the Paris Accord was all about lowering or maintaining levels, I think 2 degrees, the average, maintaining something lower or reducing it by 2 degrees because of the increases.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Victor Gensini says he's a socialist. This is simply – I'm sorry, no, I read that wrong. He's a scientist. You know, I watch the news too much. Scientists, not socialists, although they really are the same thing, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
This is simply an extreme weather event and not representative of global scale temperature trends. Australia, remember them? They're boiling with triple digit heat that's setting records opposite the Midwest because they're part of the same globe, hence global warming.
Yeah, tell the president to go to Australia and he can have his warming.
Just go straight to hell. It's about the same temperature now.
Yeah, there as well.
115.9 degrees Fahrenheit, 46.6 Celsius, setting the record for the highest temperature ever set by a major Australian city. And that place, Alice Springs, I see the Euronews temperature go by every now and then, and it's like 45, 46 Fahrenheit in the Celsius. And that is over 120, I believe.
Never impressed when I mention it.
Well, you know, it's a time and a place.
No, you're always like, yeah, it's always hot there.
It is always hot there.
No, you're right. You're
it's
right.
Always hot there.
I'm always late to the party there.
This is what we're dealing with. I mean, the conversation we should be having should be on a level so far above this, yet we're basically indulging a child. And this is where it got to today. NOAA. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, a part of the government, NOAA.gov. The day after Trump posted that tweet suggesting extreme cold temperatures in the Midwest cast doubt on the existence of global warming, the Climate Service for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration tweeted a cartoon explaining that warming oceans result in more extreme winter weather. I'm not going to read the Trump quote again, but basically, what NOAA said is winter storms don't prove that global warming isn't happening. Linking to a 2015 article on climate.gov, which explains that warmer air temperatures fuel more evaporation, leading to a wetter atmosphere, which increases rain or snow totals. Mm-hmm. The tweet also included a descriptive cartoon from the 2015 article. Now, they say that it was not made in response to Mr. Trump, but was something NOAA routinely points out when it gets extremely cold, like it is right now. But I think they didn't know exactly what they were doing. Just like today, you know, there were hearings in Washington, D.C., where the intelligence officials were talking about all the global threats that are taking place involving Afghanistan, Iraq,
Venezuela.
Syria. Well, we'll get to Venezuela. But they're basically refuting. They're refuting everything Trump has been saying. You know, they're not saying Trump is wrong, but they're basically just saying the exact opposite. And this is in front of Congress.
It's like when you have something on your plate that you don't want to eat and you sort of eat around it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe you don't want to, like, insult the chef. Maybe you're at a friend's house. They cooked you this lovely dinner. But there's that one thing you just cannot stomach on the plate. And so you just make a point to eat around the whole thing.
Giant hairball.
Yeah, you know what?
I want to make it as disgusting as possible just so we can get it out of the way.
I know. I'm not quick enough on my feet to decide on which disgusting thing I want to use as a use. Let's say some grizzle, some tough fat, you know. Or
no,
some,
I like
some
that.
Cartilage. Yeah.
Cartilage is good for you.
Yeah, or...
if we all ate more cartilage, there would be less problems in the world.
Maybe haggis.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
And
no.
Haggis. Oh, my God. Give me some haggis. I'm all into that.
Okay.
But a hairball? I don't think anybody wants a hairball on their plate. And if you have one on your plate, you do eat around it.
And the
that's what we have now. We have a hairball.
We do.
That's what we're living through, is a giant hairball. I don't think anyone's called Trump a hairball yet, have they? All right, let that be my insult. Can I have that, please?
Well, he certainly wears one.
Don't anybody else use that. That's mine.
On his freaking head. But, yes, they're very, very eloquent, or very practiced, I think, being from the intelligence community. But they very, very much, very carefully and astutely were navigating this and not speaking to his ignorance, but definitely kind of speaking around the things they didn't really want to eat.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's how you have to do it these days. You have to kind of temper your remarks, but say what you mean to say. Get it out there. Let it be a part of the dialogue. Let it drive the dialogue. And, yeah, because it's really cold. And they're saying it's going to be colder than in a generation. What's that, like 20 years or something? That's how cold it's going to be. I don't know if that they mean here, because it's been this cold here fairly recently, but definitely in the Midwest and other parts of the country, very, very cold. But, you know, this happens in Canada every year, so it's not that big a deal for them. It's just something to be careful of. But, yeah, you know, it would be nice if it snowed. That would be something. Maybe we'll get a little bit tonight. You know, it's all I ask for.
Yeah, I don't know what the intelligence agency said about the weather, but yeah, I saw reports of it being like 7 degrees. And the other interesting thing about the reports were how quickly it was going to go up. With wind chills, I think it's going to swing 100 degrees when it warms back up.
What do you mean 100 degrees?
Well, the lows will go back up to highs that are on average around 70 degrees more. So in other words, like the very low temperatures that we'll see with wind chills, like in Chicago, like
right.
You know, or wherever, negative teens or however cold it gets,
minus 60 in some places.
In other places, yeah.
Wait, I just heard that from Trump. I just read Trump and I just quoted him. My God.
Anyway, so yeah, the variability in the weather patterns is fascinating. But there was too much to talk about with the intelligence agencies. They didn't get to the weather, so. But yeah, what else are we
only up to the sports.
Refuting? Yeah, they just talk about sports and.
Well, you know, it's been a good week for Democrats. It really has. Nancy Pelosi, in particular, boy, did she kick his ass last week! Oh my God, you know, I had my doubts about having her become Speaker again. Those doubts are gone. Those doubts are cast aside because. She did not back down. Now, when we're talking about the shutdown, and by the way, Mr. Furlow is not here this week because apparently Mr. Furlow is at work, wherever he happens to work. But the point is, 800,000 other people were also involved in this, more actually, because it started to affect people all over the place. When the air traffic controllers got involved, all of a sudden things got done quickly, just like we predicted. You know, all it takes is. All the TSA workers calling in sick or the air traffic controllers or just, you know, a bunch of people that everybody else depends on, then that gets the attention of the people in power. Now, in the case of Trump versus Pelosi, she basically held firm to the fact that no money was going to be given for this stupid border wall that he's insisting upon. And everybody sees what just happened for what it is, him holding the country hostage to get something that he wants. And in the end, you know, he wound up losing the country more money than it would have cost to give him what he wanted in the first place because he was so obstinate about this. Something that most people don't want, something that is not going to be effective, something that is not necessary. And by not caving in, by not backing down, a very strong message was sent by the Democrats. Imagine that. Imagine that. Sending a strong message instead of caving. If they can keep doing this... Then things will get done because now, you know, he has been shown to be weak. He has been shown to back down. He's been shown to know when he's losing eventually. And his base is beginning to see that he's not all that he's cracked up to be.
Yeah, I think the number was like $8 billion that we lost during that. But the one thing that Democrats really did well was making distinctions with the language because – during the entirety of it, the conversation kept the volleys of arguments were going back and forth between the idea and the concept of the wall and what technically that would be. And the concept of border security, where, you know, the spoke, I think, more directly to the needs that that are what people actually want instead of this vanity project, as it was characterized, I think, pretty well towards the end of this whole thing. And the other thing about Democrats, just remember that this new House has not worked in their new leadership positions in a government that is open until today, or until this week. Mm-hmm. They basically, the freshman representatives were working in under conditions where the government was slowly shutting down or all but shuttered. And now this week is sort of their first idea of, like, you know, having trash bins emptied and things vacuumed. I think that's really cool how it came down to the speaker herself and her coalition drawing the line over this, even when they were being taken, you know, taken to task, like in a public perception sense over this vanity project. But for real, like, the buck stops with that leadership. And I think a lot of those new representatives took some notes of how to lead and how to stand against something like this.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, their first time, a lot of them first time in an open government yesterday, Monday. Also, the first time many federal workers had come back, they were taking down Christmas decorations. That's how long they were away for, 35 days, you know, setting a record. It was just insane and absurd. And any argument that he was making for this ridiculous wall was so easily deflated with logic, with facts. And his response was simply to continue repeating things such as Democrats want open borders and just ridiculous things that nobody was advocating. But I guess he feels that if he says something often enough, eventually it's going to catch. And finally, it's not. Finally, people are starting to call his bluff. Now, it's not Republicans. They won't dare do this. And it's really disturbing to see how quickly they cave, how quickly so many people cave. But it's my hope that amongst the populace, people are starting to realize, hey, this guy is not really standing up for my interests, because look what he did to these people. He didn't care at all about them. You had his cabinet, you know, people who had no clue whatsoever what it was like to miss a paycheck, thinking that people could simply what was the idea that well, if you can't afford groceries, you can work with the grocery store or something crazy like that. When was the last time these people ever bought groceries on their own? They don't know how it works.
Yeah, it was some weird phrasing. I don't know the exact word that Trump used, but it was like
that Wilbur guy.
Well, Wilbur Ross too. He was pretty
straight out of Green Acres. This guy,
super tone deaf. But yeah, it was something like they'll let you know, they'll carry you on or something like that. Basically suggesting that.
Well, that was Trump. He said work along.
They'll work along.
What does that even mean?
It's like he made up this phrase that it like harkens back to like the mom and pop grocery store that'll keep your family account on credit, and you know.
Let's go to the grocery store later, and just as, you know, when it comes time to pay, just say, "Can we work along with you?"
Yeah, I try to
see how they react to that.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a computer though, so that's not going to work.
That's what I was going to say. Is that I try to wrap my head around what would a self checkout do when you suggest that you'd like to have your stuff on credit until your furlough's up. I mean, it's basically country stores, you know, where when the harvest comes in or when you go and sell all your crops, then we'll settle up with
that.
The
raises a really good question. I've never done this, never dared to, but now I'm curious. Like, let's say you do that whole electronic cash register thing, right? And you get to the point where it's totaled up, everything is you don't use bags anymore, you use your own bags, which is great. But okay, you're at the stage where you pay, and you don't. You just walk. What does the thing do? How loudly does it protest? Does it really get a human's attention when you walk away without paying? Have you ever tried that?
Well, they probably all have cameras in them.
Yeah, but they don't. Okay, so what, your picture's going to appear in the paper or something?
I don't know, on the front door of the store, too.
I've seen that a lot. I've actually seen that in Newsday. They put a picture of somebody who stole a pair of shoes, and it's there in Newsday. Can you find this person? Because there's surveillance cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, is it possible somebody just forgot something, and now they're being publicly shamed everywhere? It just tells me that they don't really catch it the moment it happens.
But the very real... that's true. The very real payment method, though, is EBT, the government benefits, also known as food stamps, mm-hmm. ending very shortly. I think that was about to, or it did last week, right before they reopened things, or it was the end of this week that people ran the risk of their EBT and food credits running out completely, to say nothing of federal workers. And the other thing that was interesting about that whole thing is the fall on impact of just how many businesses rely on federal workers who are gainfully employed.
Right, right.
It's just so glaring how interconnected we all are. And as you indicated, I think people who would identify as supporters of this administration must be scratching their heads a little bit or asking themselves, you know, did we get a say in who gets to suffer? Because I'm sure they would have loved to see only Democrats suffer. But mm-hmm. that's not how this works.
Not
you know?
At all.
When
no.
you work for federal agencies or you're at the economic effect of these kinds of decisions, he's running a country. He is in charge of and ought to be responsible for all of us. And you supported that. You voted for that. Good job.
Yeah.
I'm saying that with the utmost sarcasm.
Let's be forgiving, though, especially those people that are starting to realize that, yeah, this guy is not really holding my best interests. How could he? He's a billionaire from New York who has no conception of what it's like to be poor, what it's like to live in other places, what it's like to be from a different background. It's not that much of a surprise, but if you're late getting it, fine. The important thing is that you get it. And, situations like this with the shutdown, you just hear what people have been going through. Their bills are due, and in many cases they have to pay late fees and all kinds of things like that. Now, you know, they get their back pay, but they're not getting interest. You know, that money's been sitting somewhere, and I'm sure it's been gathering interest. These people deserve to be paid some kind of a penalty for what was done to them. But at the same time, we deserve something back because a lot of these people weren't working, and we're paying for those services. So, you know, we're paying for something we're not getting. And then you have the federal contractors. I didn't even know about this, but these are the people that work in cafeterias or they clean the office buildings or do all kinds of things, but they're not technically federal employees. They're contractors. What does contractor mean? What does contract mean? Contract means agreement. But apparently the federal government can just say, yeah, you know what, we're not going to do it now. And these people aren't going to get paid at all. They're screwed for an entire month. Are we doing anything to help them at all? Do we care?
No, they don't get back pay. They don't get any kind of unemployment, really, unless maybe they can claim some kind of unemployment because their contract company can't, you know, find them work elsewhere. But in any event, it just...
File a police report and claim you were robbed. That's
yeah.
What I would do.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah? Huh?
Yeah.
Don't call 911, though, because emergency calls need to get through. But something else with Democrats. Democrats are starting to get a taste of what it's like to actually stand up for what you believe in. This is something that I really think is kind of cool. You know, there's no State of the Union address tonight.
Yeah, I heard it was canceled.
That's kind of cool, too. But it's going to be next week, a week from today. Nancy Pelosi again kicked Trump's ass by... I didn't know she could do this. Did you know that she had this power? I mean, obviously she did.
Well, they have to authorize the speech.
I didn't know that the Speaker of the House could just disinvite the president because it's never really happened before. At least not recently.
It's her house.
It's her house, and she just moved in. We'll move back in, and it's great to see somebody actually do something with it.
Now, this is where, kind of wonky political creatures are very helpful because they know how this thing works. And, yeah, you may not feel like they're always in your with your interests at heart in every single area, but it really helps to have experience in these different roles and to see that play out. you realize that this is what multiple houses of government and branches, this is the effect of that. That's why it's separated like this. And so right. She had real power and exercised it.
Yeah, that's what we've been lacking is the exercising of it. So it's really good to see that. Anyway, the other cool thing that Democrats did, guess who's going to be giving the Democratic response to the I still say Democratic, by the way. You notice how Trump has started saying Democrat, the Democrat response, he would call it. And it sounds stilted. It doesn't flow off the tongue. But all his Republican allies and the people on Fox News are all dutifully saying Democrat now instead of Democratic.
Well, it's because they don't understand the difference between Democratic and Democrat. And
right.
He just wants to make sure they don't get confused when they're voting.
Yeah, I know, but it's not working. Anyway, so who's going to give the Democratic response to the State of the Union? Did you hear this?
I did.
You did? Okay, then you know that it's Stacey Abrams. Yeah, which is great. She was the gubernatorial candidate in Georgia last fall. She was robbed.
I was just going to say, stolen and should be Governor Stacey Abrams.
Absolutely. She ran a great campaign. She's very well spoken. Said she's honored to give the Democratic response at a moment when our nation needs to hear from leaders who can unite for a common purpose. I am honored to be delivering the Democratic State of the Union response. She said Democratic. Well, actually, she tweeted that. People don't speak anymore. So the Democratic response will give Abrams a major platform to counter the president following his address to Congress and the nation. And the speech is sure to further elevate her national profile. Her electrifying message of courage, perseverance, and hope reinvigorated our nation and our politics and continues to inspire millions of Americans in every part of the country. Nancy Pelosi said that in a statement, not a tweet, a statement. Stacey Abrams embodies the American dream, and her powerful message of progress for all is deeply needed during this time for our country. And Chuck Schumer said Stacey Abrams offers a welcome stark contrast to President Trump's politics of division and lack of leadership as American families are still feeling the impacts of his self-imposed shutdown. Stacey Abrams is a present and future leader in this country. She is a dynamic, moral leader who she delivered results on the issues that matter most to Americans, and she tirelessly pursues fairness and justice for everyone in her state. And when we say she was robbed, it's not just because she lost the election. It's how she lost the election. We can get into the details of that, but it's
voter suppression.
Yeah, a lot of voter suppression. The fact that the Secretary of State was her opponent.
He was changing the rules.
In Georgia. Yeah, Brian Kemp.
Yep.
The race ended on a contentious note. Basically, she said that democracy failed Georgia. I'll read a quote from her. Make no mistake, the former Secretary of State was deliberate and intentional in his actions, referring to Brian Kemp. I know that 8 years of systemic disenfranchisement, disinvestment, and incompetence has its desired effect on the electoral process in Georgia. Quite a story to tell there. Quite a story to tell in many places. But I want to talk about a state I'm proud of, and that's our own state, New York. Yeah, today, this is what happened today. State legislators overwhelmingly approved the bill today that would ban schools from arming teachers, saying adding guns to campuses wouldn't stop the spate of school shootings. Imagine that. With the mother of one of the Parkland massacre victims on hand, the Senate approved the measure 42-21. The State Assembly 86-35. And Governor Cuomo said he will sign the bill into law as soon as he can find a damn pen. That's right there. That's a quote.
Mm-hmm.
Backers said the arming of teachers would more likely lead to more accidental deaths and accidental shootings of bystanders rather than halting a mass shooter. Sanity. It's so nice to hear sanity coming from a hall of government. While other states are considering arming teachers, New York lawmakers said that's the wrong response. If you think back to your fourth or fifth grade class, where would a loaded gun have been kept in that class where only a teacher and no one else could access it? That's according to Senator Todd Kominsky, Democrat of Long Beach. The idea of teachers roaming the halls and looking for an active shooter and coming around a corner facing maybe another student or law enforcement officer, I think you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, you keep it in the guinea pig cage or like with the hamsters under the sawdust?
Think of who your teachers were. I'm thinking of all my teachers right now. And my God, any of them with a gun would terrify me. Wow. No, it's wrong. It's just, for God's sake, people, think this through. Of course,
not funny to think about stressed out teachers trying to load weapons.
That's the last thing they need.
No, it's not at all funny.
Some upstate lawmakers, though, said some of their schools are too remote to rely on local police arriving in time to stop a mass shooting. This, according to Assemblyman Andy Goodall, Republican from Chautauqua, who represents New York's farthest southwest corner. I have multiple townships in my county that have no local police at all, no sheriff substations, no state police barracks. This bill is making it impossible for a rural school district to protect itself. You know what's making it impossible? No cops. Have some cops, for God's sake. Here, have a bunch. We can lend you a few. I mean, that's a ridiculous excuse to just hand out guns to anybody because you don't have adequate law enforcement. Being remote is not an excuse. Sorry.
Yeehaw.
Yeah.
But in seriousness, I think it's also about what you're doing for those communities, how you're keeping people healthy and reducing the access to really, really deadly firearms, stuff that, you know, isn't for hunting or, you know, legitimate protection of a household or something. I mean, it just seems like a silly answer to the most extreme case. And you have this like fantasy of heroes, like a hero moment when, as you said, it's more likely you're gonna have an accident.
Yeah, it's Hollywood. It's fantasy. It's exactly what it is.
And plenty of these shootings have had heroes, teachers who've taken bullets. But, you know, I've done other things that are appropriate in those situations, like lockdowns, which are now unfortunately a regular thing. We've had stories of students throwing books and, you know, the kinds of training they're doing now regularly as a result of the phenomena. But the phenomena itself is what we need to really work on.
Yeah, like accepting that as normal is a huge problem. Using words like lockdown in schools is something that needs to stop. And
yeah.
Obviously, you can't just snap your fingers and make it stop. You have to work towards creating an environment where that is no longer the reality. That's the problem. That's what we should be attacking. Just today, they concluded. Remember the Las Vegas shooting where 58 people were mowed down by that guy from the hotel? They still don't know why he did it, and they've concluded that it's going to be a mystery forever. We're never going to know. So, you know, if you don't know why an otherwise sane person suddenly goes berserk and mows down dozens and dozens of people, it could have killed a lot more. You know, it's... you're not going to be able to prevent it from happening. You're basically saying, yeah, it's going to happen because we can't predict it. You know, your mental health registry or whatever, that's not going to be enough. You need to restrict access to these weapons of death that can kill so many people. And if you don't do that, you're accepting that reality, that unfortunate reality.
Insert any other tool or object or, you know, could be a possible weapon,
mm-hmm.
and you see the silliness of it. Like, okay, yeah, we're going to allow all teachers to have a really long shovel, and if a kid steps up, you whack them really hard with the shovel or a pickaxe or whatever it is. It just sounds silly, and it doesn't seem like you're actually addressing the issue. Yeah, you're giving the teacher an offensive weapon, and maybe they'll step on the shovel and whack themselves in the head with it, but... You know.
Give the teacher a bunch of romaine lettuce, all right?
Ooh, salmonella.
And all of a sudden, you know, because maybe something's wrong with this, yeah, you yank it out of their hands because while you might be entitled to lettuce, this is potentially dangerous and it's not in the public interest. So get it the hell out of your hands.
And at the same time, you're teaching teachers how to kill kids. Like, oh, by the way, this involves you whacking a kid with a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... I don't know.
How many analogies do we have going on at the same time?
We got a lot. It's a very layered show today.
Yeah, it really is. Well, here's something else that New York State did today. The state legislature and Governor Andrew Cuomo on Tuesday prepared to pass a red flag bill that would take guns away from legal gun owners who judges determine are mentally ill. Well, the Republicans should love this because that's what they're pushing for. They seem to think that... all of this can be solved by simply weeding out the mentally ill people and taking guns away from them. And why didn't you see the warning signs? Somebody said this person was disturbed 10 years ago and nothing was done. Yeah, you know, these are the same people that stand up and defend those very people. You know, if somebody had reported the Las Vegas shooter as potentially dangerous, they would have stood up for him and said, no, he has every right to have these massively insane weapons. So the vote was 42-21. Guess how that went. If thousands of people were dying year after year of some disease, we would spare absolutely no cost until we found a cure, said Senator Alessandra Blasi, Democrat of Mount Vernon. But for gun violence, we are told there really is no solution, that the right to own guns is more important than the right to live. That, to me, is truly insane. And thank you, New York, for today not being insane. It feels good. This is all a result of the election. You know, the Democrats being voted in November, the state Senate changing completely, and now we have some sanity.
They're still under attack, though, with the what is it, the Supreme Court rulings over allowing concealed carry or allowing people to carry guns across state lines and stuff. I mean, there is no shortage of gun fights. Wait, that sounds wrong. No shortage of policy issues around guns, but this is a good step, I think, at least towards setting up the right attitudes for you know, what solutions will and will not be entertained.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's been busy. It's been an eventful. We saw a 1937 film, The Life of Emile Zola, who I did not even know about.
I had no idea about this story either.
Yeah, we've been going through every year seeing the Academy Award Best Film, and we're up to 1937. Now, The Life of Emile Zola, it's a 1937 American biographical film about the French author, which basically, there's not many biographical films. In fact, the one before that, 1936, was about Ziegfeld. That was also a biographical film, so two in a row, and they all, both began with Z, which I thought was unusual. But this is basically about this French writer who was basically pretty infamous in some of the social things he got involved in, particularly a fascinating story known as the Dreyfus incident, where a Jewish soldier in France was accused of being a spy for Germany. And this was back in the 1800s. The two countries were kind of at each other's throats back then. He was basically framed, and they, you know, the army found out who really did it, and they covered that up because they couldn't afford the scandal, and they basically had this guy locked away on Devil's Island, which is off the coast of South America and was a French colony. And what was interesting about the film was the fact that they totally glossed over the fact the guy was Jewish. In fact, you see it written in a piece of paper. You see his religion, Jew. That's it. That's the only reference. And supposedly the reason they glossed over this was because, and this is how Hollywood works and worked back then, you have kind of a mixture of courage and cowardice. They didn't want to offend the Nazi regime. That sounds horrible, but 1937? Didn't want to offend the Nazi regime. Think about regimes that we don't want to offend. That we were talking about this the other day. You want to be able to market your film to a global audience, to different countries. Do you really want to upset them by saying something, by pointing something out that there's? And the funny thing is, it was French anti-Semitism that they would be pointing out, not German anti-Semitism. But they were so careful that they did not mention that word. They just had that one reference to it. And there even was somebody in California representing the Nazi regime who had the opportunity to look over films and give notes and say, yeah, we'd prefer it if this wasn't in there. That was America in the 30s, before the war.
Yeah, and there's plenty of regimes and markets, you know, putting that in quotations, around the world now that are emerging. I'm not going to mention any by name, but you know, you can surely come up with your own examples of places that would seem enticing to sell films. People that, you know, are wealthy enough to go and see something, and there's a lot of them, and they all want to go and see some of our greatest exports, a la cinema. So, you know, here we are trying to produce things for various markets that are sensitive, that maybe tell certain specific stories and so on and so forth. But what are the limitations? What is the line? What are the cultural sensitivities? I mean, this isn't just like ad culture where you get a word wrong and it means something else in another culture. This is you know, feature-length storytelling where you have certain characters and costuming and language, and then the story itself, whose allegiances and nation states, what is involved in the storytelling, whether it's a small, you know, a larger feature or a small story just about a locality. So there's just so many aspects of that that could come under scrutiny that perhaps your market here in New York, you know, maybe there's a lot more openness about what is allowed, or maybe it isn't. Maybe it's quite the contrary. In fact, we can't even imagine the things that are being censored right under our noses as we speak.
Yeah, you don't find out.
You don't find out. So it gave us, I think, great ways to think about what we're able to see and what we're not able to see, and what goes on now as far as what's greenlit and how certain films come about, whether it's like the superhero genre that seems to be the only thing Hollywood can do that's safe.
We are learning so much by watching these films, seeing how history is unfolding year after year. Even when it's a film about previous history, we learn something about that. But just learning about how it was received and how it was presented, I read up on this. It turns out the guy, the name George, that's George without an E at the end, Gisling, G-Y-S-S-L-I-N-G, you know, he was the Nazi consul in Los Angeles, and he was allowed to review and make recommendations on films. This guy really existed. The Nazi consul in Los Angeles was able to basically censor our own films. That's incredible to me. So I learned so much from that.
And we could go on. I mean, absolutely. This stuff is so important. You know, media shapes consciousness. This show could be shaping society as we speak. Yes, all the things we're talking about tonight could be impacting everyone in our listening range and all the people they ever talk to and think about and interact with. That is the power of media. And so these things matter when you read about it historically and then think about the current context. How is media impacted? It's just fascinating. We could go on and on.
Yes, we
many
can.
Shows on this.
We'll be seeing our 1938 film, whatever that is. Hopefully by next week we'll talk about that as well. I suggest people do similar things. Just focus on something and learn as much as you can about it. It's so interesting and so accessible these days, too. So that is one of the more interesting things I think we're doing. Hey, I wanted to update people. Remember I was complaining about my doctor bill back in December. Yeah, because I complain about everything on this show. But this was ridiculous, okay? What they did was, you know, I had a checkup. I decided I wanted to keep my doctor and not, you know, go outside my insurance plan.
This was like the overbilling thing? It was like a grand or like
$2,000?
Yeah,
basically I had this 25-minute appointment, mostly a conversation, asking questions. So, you know, was this particular, you know, thing here, is that something to worry about? Or, you know, just all kinds of symptoms, things you just bring up. And that's what it was. It was a conversation. You know, I paid $300 when I got there, and I figured, you know, that'd probably cover it. Didn't. $800 just for the conversation. And then I got a flu shot, which you can get for free in a drugstore. $100 for the vaccine, and then $150 to administer the vaccine. $250 for one damn flu shot. Oh, it wasn't over. There was an EKG. Okay, I should have seen that one coming. That was $250 right there. I wrote a letter. Wrote a letter to Stony Brook Medicine, because that's where I went, saying, you know, this is kind of unfair. This is not how it should work. I wanted to see this doctor because I like this doctor, and I believe in the quality of care here, and it's unfortunate my insurance isn't accepted, but, you know, I really would like to have a more reasonable price here. And I got a letter back. I'm going to read you part of it. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to contact, blah, 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 allowing us an opportunity to address the issues you brought forward in your letter. Our commitment is to provide both excellent clinical care and compassionate services. Stony Brook University Hospital is committed to an ongoing performance improvement process. By hearing from patients or families about their experiences, we are able to improve the care we deliver to all of our patients. The bill you submitted with your letter is for physician services provided. I contacted their office on your behalf and confirmed that the bill is accurate for services you received. Yeah, a review of the schedule note documents that you were contacted prior to your appointment to inform you that as a self-pay patient, the $300 paid at the appointment would be a deposit, and you would be billed for the remaining balance. Further review of your visit documents, four separate issues, all discussed and screened for during your appointment. I don't know how one flu shot is two issues, but whatever. You have options available to assist with payment of your balance, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, you know what? I don't blame Stony Brook because they're not doing anything any different than anybody else. This is the corruptness of our healthcare system. And I'm going to prove it to you. I have I went to get blood work as well, and my insurance does cover that. And looking at what they – I'm looking at this now for, I believe, the first time. Yes, I have not seen this yet. This is the actual bill. This is what it cost to
– Should I restrain you?
No, no. Okay. To get your blood work done, it cost $555. No, $555.21. That's what it costs. That is what it costs. Whew. Yeah. However, my insurance company gets a discount. Do you know how much the discount is?
30%?
$491.15.
Oh, they get a discount.
They get that kind of a discount. And then the insurance company pays as well. They paid $42.39, leaving me with a balance of $21.67. You see how it works? If I didn't have insurance, I would be billed $555.21. I would not get the discount. But my insurance company gets almost all of that taken off as a discount. They pay a certain amount, and I pay a certain amount, very minimal. That is how it works if you have insurance. And if you don't have insurance, you get screwed. That is what's wrong with the system because, A, a lot of people don't have insurance, thanks to our president, and, B, there's lots of places that don't take the right kind of insurance, and you have to either hop all over the place or pay out of pocket, which – you know, I thought wouldn't be as much of a catastrophe as it was. I'm going to pay it. You know, I'll pay the whole thing like I said I would. I did ask them, drag this out as long as possible. So it's going to take, I'm going to pay $35 a month for the next several years. But the reason I'm doing it that way is so that every time I see my credit card bill, I am reminded not to go back and to do something else instead and to never, ever engage in this kind of interaction because the system is broken. Again, it's not Stony Brook. They just are playing. You expect better from the place that you're familiar with, but you're not going to get any better. This is how the system is. It has to be fixed. It's wrong. And it's not how it works in other parts of the world.
You might be able to go to medical school and become a doctor for less.
All right. That's a thought.
I just realized that while you were talking about that.
Well, there's a lot you can do for less than that. But, you know, we are pretty much out of time, unfortunately. But it just makes you mad, you know? It makes you angry. Anyway, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know how you feel.
Even if you're mad as hell.
And you can't take it anymore. Good night.
Bye. I ain't gonna take it no more.
WUSB, Stony Brook.